Hey friends, and welcome to the Shoot Proof Podcast. We're so glad that you're here. Thank you so much for the feedback that you've been giving us. And keep the feedback coming. If you have comments or questions, or if you want to recommend something, a guest or a topic that you want us to cover, feel free to comment or email us at podcast@shootproof.com. Also, if you're enjoying these podcasts, it would mean the world to us if you would go to iTunes and search for the Shoot Proof Podcast, subscribe, and most importantly, leave us a review or a rating. That'll help us with our rankings in iTunes and hopefully help us get more exposure to more photographers. So today we're coming at you from Music City, USA, and we're joined by Sean McClellan. Sean has been an active part of the photography industry for a long time. He's a contributor and an educator, and we really admire his dedication to his craft. His studio, McClellan Style, has been named one of the top 10 photography studios in the world by Adorama, and he's really found his niche in the high-end wedding market. But is the high-end market somewhere that you just wake up one day and find yourself, or does it take some intentional planning to get there? We want to know, so let's dive in. Hi, Sean.
Hi, Graham.
thanks for welcoming us to Nashville, or Franklin, technically.
Technically, yes.
Not really in Nashville, but sort of, kind of.
It all blends together out here. I appreciate you guys coming out.
Yeah. Well, we're going to jump right into to some questions because we're really interested in where you found yourself in the wedding market, kind of moving towards a higher-end client. And you know, we want to know kind of what the intention was behind that and how you got to that point. Yeah. So first things first, you know, do you think that your journey to a higher price point in weddings has been an intentional one? Would you say it's been intentional?
It was very intentional. Our first year in business, when we started booking our very first clients, like we told them right up front, this is introductory pricing. So if you tell friends and family what we're doing for you, it's not going to be the same next year, or the year after, that sort of thing.
So the expectation setting started
absolutely
at that first meeting.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. From the very first ones that we booked, we were already telling people that because we knew we wanted to move higher. We didn't necessarily have like super high end or anything as a goal. I know like in the very, very beginning that it was like, you know, we'll move the pricing up, but, you know, we want to make sure that we're accessible to people, that sort of thing. And of course, after we realized how much work it was, that quickly went out the door with like, whoa, I need to be making more than minimum wage here. So, let's up the game a little bit. But yes, in the beginning we did already set that expectation because I know that's like a lot of people's issue is, you know, how do you raise prices? How do you spring that on people? So yeah, we just started with, this is low.
Yeah.
This is where we will be very shortly. So luckily we didn't meet with resistance and that sort of thing when we kind of moved up the ranks with that. So
yeah. Cool. So to back up just a minute, like tell us a little bit about, you know, when you started and things that you were doing, and then like how things changed over time as you started moving into, you know, you started raising your prices, started moving in. Mm-hmm. How did that affect like your processes, your the way that your business operated, I guess?
Oh, I mean, there were a lot of things that changed along the way. I think one of the things that was most odd that we didn't expect is we found that there, at the time anyway, there were like holes, like pricing holes in the market where, you know, if you'd increase from one level just a little bit, it was, you had people like, let's say for example, that it was, you know, like if your pricing started at like $2,000 or something, for example, for weddings, if you increased to say $2,750 or something or other like that, it's like that's too high for the people that were looking in the $1,500 to $2,000 or $2,500 range. But then it's like a completely different type of client that's looking for the $3,000 to $5,000 plus or something. And so there were a couple of times where we changed pricing, tried to move up, and accidentally found one of those valleys.
Yeah.
this thing that we totally didn't expect at all, and suddenly it was, you're too expensive. But then we also, the part we didn't expect was the, you're not expensive enough. I mean, like we did actually get comments from people that are like, why do you only charge? I'm like, what? What do you mean? what are you saying? And all of that. So it took a lot of messing around with exactly how the price point worked, what we offered, and that sort of thing. But I do remember there was one year where we didn't change anything about what we were offering, and we upped our starting price by $1,000, and the next five people in a row that we met with all booked on the spot. And typically we had always sent people home with a, all right, think about things, we can put stuff together. And it was five in a row that were, okay, so can we do something right now? And we were just blown away by that, with, we didn't change anything. What happened? What's going on? And it, we realized that you can actually be priced too low in comparison to how you're branded, your work, and all that sort of thing, that it just doesn't feel right to people. Like, why are you presenting this as your appearance and your persona, but this doesn't feel right, you know? So
okay. And how long did it take, you know, to really feel out like, oh, we're in a dead spot, or like, oh, we really hit our pricing? Did you keep your pricing there for a while? Were you kind of flexible with it, or?
That was a while ago. I can't really be 100% certain on that, but I feel like it was probably, you know, a couple of months, something or other like that. Another thing that we've always done is on all of our price sheets that we have sent out, at the bottom, I always have put pricing subject to change at any time. I know a lot of people have a refresh your prices once a year type thing, or the this is our 2015 or 2016 price sheet and that sort of thing. And I never wanted to be locked into something for that long. I mean, even booking things a year out, it's already such a process to be able to change things. You know, if you make a change now, a lot of the things that you're doing, it's going to be a year before you realize that, you know, in action, in the wedding business. And so I wanted to minimize that as much as possible. So yeah, luckily it was no big deal to say, all right, today this is what it is. That's not working. Next month, all right, now it's different. Let's see what happens, and that sort of thing. So, and now we haven't really changed pricing for a while. I think other than like just minor tweaks and that sort of thing, we've been about where we're at now for, I don't know, 3 years, something or other like that. And it's, it works perfectly well for us. It's great. I'm happy with it. And but if I want to change it tomorrow, I can. Yeah. So that makes me happy, and I like that flexibility. So
Gotcha. So how many well, this is a two-part question. What was there a point at which you kind of discovered, okay, we're in a high-end market now, you know, we're kind of a higher-end wedding studio. Was that like a point in time, is the first part of that question. And then secondly, if there was kind of a point in time that you can look back and say, okay, I kind of remember that, about how many years into, you know, your business would you say you were at that point?
Well, I mean, when you talk about a high-end price point, a high-end studio, that sort of thing, I mean, I would even flip that back around on you to ask you, I mean, what do you even mean by that? Because I mean, is in your opinion, is that a what's the ending price point that people end up versus where they start? I mean, like, how would you define?
That's a really good point. I guess the you know, the way that I'm imagining a high end price point would be, you know, clients are paying you a significant amount above the average of your market.
Okay.
And that's kind of how I'm defining it. Sure. So whether that's through kind of the package price, like that initial price that they're paying you, or if it's kind of through sales.
Yeah. I don't know if there was a specific time. I take that back. I suppose there actually kind of was. It was between 1 and 2 years that we really hit that and figured things out. And the way that we got there was right from the beginning, we started learning everything we possibly could. We joined forums. At the time, there were like good paid private forums and that sort of thing. We got tickets to a conference, and we'd never been to anything like that before. And so it was just a few months after we really got things going that were, all right, we're going to buy tickets, we're going to go to this thing. And, you know, we flew out there. I believe that the first one we went to was in Las Vegas, and we get into our room and we're going straight to classes, going straight back to the room, like, be careful, don't talk to anybody, they'll know that we're not real photographers. But I mean, we soaked up everything. We took so many notes and then reviewed them and put things into action. And then more importantly than that, we took note of who was doing what we wanted to do. We became friends with a lot of those people, and some of the people, we seeked them out. Like, even just a post on a forum, somebody saying, oh, we just hit this great milestone or something. I mean, I would message those people and say, hey, can we talk about that? Mm-hmm. And in one particular instance, I had messaged Dave and Quinn from DQ Studios up in Canada, and I forget what it is that they had posted. It was something or other about how they were selling maybe something like an average of $3,000 for engagement sessions. And I saw that, and I was just, at the time, like, what? So I messaged that. I'm like, was that a typo? Is that correct? Is that, I mean, what? And Dave, he messages me back, and he said, no, that's what we're doing. And he mentioned something or other about putting together like a private workshop thing. He said, you know, you guys can come up, we'll show you what we're doing. And we just thought, okay, that sounds great, sure, let's do it. And so we booked flights to Canada, went up there during Calgary's 110 year record low temperature, which was maybe
that sounds fun.
Yeah we did a shoot out with them as well, and my wife, she was in a strapless dress during that. Interesting, but no, it turned out great. But we learned all sorts of amazing things from them and just totally blew our mind as to what was possible and all of that. And so we came home, implemented all of this stuff, and it was very shortly after that that suddenly we were doing double, triple, quadruple what we'd been doing before, and just kept growing from there and everything. And it's definitely about learning as much as you can and seeing who's doing what you want to do, and you can learn so much from people, and it really cuts that learning curve. I try to do that in anything mm-hmm. that I do, like whatever whatever it is. So yeah, it was fantastic in that respect. So I'd say year and a half is kind of when that started. But yeah, definitely by 2 years it was, all right, this is the thing, we can, here we are, surprise. So yeah. Absolutely.
So to paraphrase, I think what I'm hearing you say is that education, like really seeking, you know, what other people are doing, figuring out
definitely
what is it that I want to do, mm-hmm. and then who's doing that and how can I learn from them?
Absolutely. And like, there's so many resources now that weren't available then. I mean, there weren't podcasts and all these blogs and live streaming stuff and online courses and all these things. I mean, none of that stuff was around then and everything. So like, we had to seek people out, go travel places and all that. And I'm not that I would say that you shouldn't do that, but I mean, there are so many things you can do now without going to that level yet, just at your own house. It's amazing what you can do right now. But yeah, I mean, actually doing it, that's key.
Yeah.
So I know a lot of people will take a lot of notes, whether it's something they watch online or go to a conference, and then that sits in a corner somewhere and never gets looked at again. And yeah, I mean, that makes you feel great while you're doing it, but it's not going to help if you don't review it and put it into action and all of that. So yeah. Mel, my wife, she's fantastic at actually putting things on the calendar and saying, okay, so we're going to do this thing, here's how we break it up into steps, and all right, now that thing you said you're going to do, now you're going to do it, and here's the days you're going to do it. I'm like, oh, okay, let's do this. All
I'm
right.
tasked out. I know what
yeah,
to do.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So yeah,
that's cool. So do you think that being a photographer that's serving a higher end client, mm-hmm. is that in some ways dependent on where you are located physically, or
to an extent? Up until the last couple of years, more than half of our weddings have either been out of state or out of the country, and we now have 3 kids with a 4th on the way, and luckily we have been able to move a lot of things here locally, and I'm honestly not even 100% sure how that has happened, but it has, and I am thankful for that. That's great. I mean, like, I love traveling, but when you're doing it for work and when you're doing it so much, it's nice to be home, you know, especially now with having a family and all of that. So, I do know of a lot of people who live in the middle of nowhere or something, and they travel. Having said that though, if you don't travel, I think you can, I mean, there's a low, mid, and high market in any area, and I don't necessarily think it's fair to look at how much somebody's making in, you know, one of the most expensive places in the country and then compare that to wherever and sure. say, oh, well, you know, this person's high end and this person isn't. And it's like, well, you know, a house and your living expenses are half or a third of what they are there. So if you're making half as much, relatively speaking, it's kind of the same for you. Right. So yes, to an extent it is, but I don't necessarily think to an important extent. We have done like consults with photographers that are, oh, in my area, things are like this or things are like that. And it's like, that's only important to an extent. I don't think it's really as big of a deal as a lot of people make it out to be. I've certainly seen that kind of talk online. Oh, you can do that because you're in Southern California. It's mm-hmm. like, well, you know.
Okay. When you're going after these clients, you mm-hmm. know, when you discovered, hey, you know, we can service a higher end market, a higher end client. Mm-hmm. Is that an intentional thing in terms of, are you going out and looking for that type of person, or how do you attract clients that are willing to invest more in photography?
A lot of the inquiries that we get are because we really nurtured good relationships with other photographers and vendors in town, and so there's a lot going on in terms of referrals that we send out and that we bring in. And I think what's key for us for that question would be, we don't want to book everybody who gets in touch with us. We very much so want to make sure that it's a good match, not only for us but for them as mm-hmm. well. And like now, for example, I don't do booking on the spot anymore. Like, if somebody says I want to book right now during an initial meeting, I will tell them, go home, think about it, talk about it, talk with each other, get back with us, you know, tomorrow, the next day. Because at this point we want to do maybe 10 weddings a year, that sort of thing. Whereas at the high point, I think we were doing about 35 or so, and then all the shoots associated with that. And mm-hmm. I want to make sure that every single person we're spending that time with, that they are thrilled with that, and that makes us thrilled to be there as well. So with being comfortable with turning down people that aren't the perfect match, and it's not necessarily even turning them down so much as just during the initial conversations, meetings, that sort of thing, I'm totally happy to say, you know what, you're saying these things, here are some people that we know that are perfect for that. And luckily we have good relationships with the other people in town that they'll do the same thing. Mm-hmm. And so by working together rather than as competition, then it works out better for everybody. It's fantastic. So it's not necessarily attracting them initially so much as just everything that comes in the door. We just make sure that the ones that actually book, that we're helping them make the best decision for them, which therefore is the best decision for us. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
Do you, you know, so a lot of relationships, it sounds mm-hmm. like it's a lot of relationship
Absolutely.
Building,
Definitely.
Maintaining relationships. Mm-hmm. Have you ever paid for any kind of advertising, to reach that particular market, or?
Not to reach that market. I mean, we tried to, in the early stages, any magazine advertising we did, magazines, you remember those?
Right. Were those things with paper?
Yeah, paper.
That you, okay, yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, we used to advertise in those sometimes, and we would always make sure that we did full-page color ads, because if it was any less than that, in my opinion, that says, well, why didn't you do the bigger one like these people did? So that cut out a lot of options for us, because it's like, okay, anything we're going to be in, it has to be the biggest, best thing that they have. But what we found was that didn't really end up attracting the right people anyway. Mm. And so I think the last time we paid for advertising was probably 2007. And definitely the relationships has been key. It's much more important to get featured on blogs, that sort of thing, where people can see your work and just click on it and then find you. And then, I mean, the more places you are, the more people see your name, the more you get returned in Google search results and all of that. There's definitely a price point that you hit where I don't know of advertising that really works for that very well anymore. Maybe the one exception to that might be if you're seen in certain publications, like it might reinforce people's decision who have already found you other ways. But there's a lot of ways to get featured in those, again, through relationships, submitting weddings, that sort of thing. And I mean, clients are smart now. It's not like they're going to see a paid feature in a magazine and think that you were chosen by them. I mean, like, they can tell this is an advertisement versus these are people that we are featuring in whatever,
right,
and all that. And that it carries a lot more weight to not be the paid thing,
right?
You know, so
yeah.
So yeah, that's definitely been our focus for the last 8 years? Jeez. Yeah, back when paper was a thing. Okay.
Right.
I guess it has been that long. All right.
So I think, you know, part of when people are thinking through their pricing, I know I've experienced this. There's kind of this fear with changing it if it's working, you know, but alongside of that, there's also this desire to, you know, hey, it would be great if I could, you know, shoot a little bit less, make a little bit more, you know, have time to hang out with my kids, for instance.
Sure. Yes. That's an important one.
Yeah. Right. So, you know, what would you say to somebody who said, I don't think I can raise my prices? What would your response be to that?
I would be very careful if you're worried about that type of thing and if things are working for you about raising pricing on the front end versus thinking about what you can do afterwards. Like I said, we haven't changed our pricing for quite a while now, other than just minor tweaks here and there. And the reason for that is the price point that we're at right now is one where, with the amount of inquiries that we have coming in, it automatically filters out a lot of people that don't value what we do and makes it a much smaller pool of people that we're working with to get to what we want. And we focus on, okay, these people met with us, they expressed interest in stuff to hang in their house. I'm not going to modify our pricing to have collections ahead of time that are more things hanging in people's house. I'm just going to work with those people specifically to, okay, while I'm shooting at your engagement session, your wedding, I'm going to be shooting in a way that I know these are going to turn out to be images that would look great on the walls. And then I'm going to show that to them afterwards. There's a lot of great software now. Chris from Preveal, you can show people images in the exact size on their walls. It's fantastic. And he just came out with a new thing that lets you do it. If you don't have an iPad, you can do it through the online interface. And I mean, tools like that are fantastic. And you don't have to change your pricing when you're using that type of thing after the fact to get people to say, oh, wow, I never thought about doing this. And even if you tell them about it, I mean, that's not really good enough in a visual world that we live in now.
Right.
I mean, we're the artists. We're the ones that are supposed to show people what can be done. I mean, if I just tell people, oh, you could hang up something large on your wall, so what? That doesn't mean anything to them. They don't do this. They're not familiar with it. But if I show them, here's your living room and here's what I would put on it and here's what it would look like in this exact size, in this exact grouping, it's much easier for them to look at that and say, oh, wow, you know what? That does look great. Yes, I will take two. That's right. Two.
So, or three even, maybe.
Sure. Why not three? Absolutely. Right.
I know you've done some interesting things with sales. You know, you've sold products that aren't necessarily kind of, you know, the run-of-the-mill products. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Definitely. So for me, I really like trying to be creative, doing different things. I've tried to have real jobs before, for example, and that just doesn't work for me because, you know, after the first few weeks or something, it's like, okay, I figured out how things work here. This is now just doing the same thing over and over. And so, like, weddings were really great for me because every single person, every single event, they were all different. But then, after doing it for so long, it's hard for that to be different. And so, rather than the days being different, we then focused on how can we make the images look different. And so we tried to shoot as differently as we possibly could. Then it was locations that would be different as we possibly could. For a lot of our out-of-state people, I would just tell them if they were, oh, hey, we'll fly to Nashville or you can fly to New York to do the engagement session, I would just start saying, hey, if two of us are going to get on a plane, four of us could get on a plane and we can go anywhere. And then that got people thinking of like, oh, great, let's do something in these crazy canyons in Arizona. We ended up having somebody book a shoot with us in Iceland. And I mean, we did some stuff in Italy. I mean, and it was all just by saying, hey, have you thought about this? And I'm like, no, we hadn't. Sure, let's do that. Now, what was the beginning of that question?
Just, the idea of selling things creatively,
Right. Okay. So yeah, then it was shooting the different locations. And then after that, I mean, we went to a lot of cool places and there's still a million cool places that we could go, but just to continue that whole creative different thing, which I need, it was like, okay, well, how can we display images in different ways? And so we started creating unique one-of-a-kind art pieces where we would build unique ways to display people's images. And so, I mean, we've built things out of wood, concrete, metal, all sorts of things now. So here in town, there's a big metal walking bridge. And so something that we built for some clients either last year, I think it was the year before now, I built this mount that looked like it was built out of the bridge itself, and it had a photo of them on the bridge that I printed on metal. So it's like this 3-panel metal thing. And I matched all the rivets, and I went out there, took photos of it, matched the color, so it was painted the same color and everything and all of that. And like, I'll tell people about that. I'll make mock-up in Photoshop, that sort of thing, say, you know, hey, what do you think about this? And again, just like the groupings on the wall, if you show them this unique one-of-a-kind thing, then it's like, wow, like that's great. I'll take it. And not everybody does. I'd say when we make those type of things for people, like the really crazy ones like that, I'd say maybe 1 out of 3 end up going for it. But I mean, it doesn't really take that much time to come up with an idea and mock something up and show them what the possibility is. And then the people that do, then that's something new. I know one of the first times that we made one of those, I showed the people and they were like, yeah, that's great, we'll take it. And then my immediate thought was, oh, now I have to actually figure out how to make this. Like, I didn't actually think they were even going to go for it, you know? So, so shortly after that, you know, there I was in the garage with a blowtorch, chemicals, and all sorts of stuff. And I'm like, well, all right, let's see what happens here.
That's awesome.
Now, obviously, I mean, this sounds interesting, but without being able to see it, that's, you know, a tough thing to really describe.
Sure.
So I actually set something up so you can see the concept, design, and creation of one of these if you'd like to. And cool. So if you get out your cell phone and you text Mo Money, M-O-M-O-N-E-Y, no spaces, to 33444, then it'll automatically send you a link to a 7-step, here's what we designed, here's what we created, here's what we built, and you can see what that looks like.
So, that's awesome. He's not kidding.
No, I'm not kidding.
That's why we love Sean McClellan.
Yeah, text Mo Money 33444. That's it. So, yeah.
That's awesome. Well, to on that note, I feel like maybe we should shift gears a little bit.
Sure, let's do it.
So Shootproof, our new tagline is focus on what matters most. Mm-hmm. We feel like that kind of applies to the way that we run our business. Mm-hmm. We feel like it applies to the way that a lot of our clients, our customers, you know, run their businesses. Mm-hmm. So I just want to know, you know, what is it that matters most to you?
Yeah, for me, it's a combination of being healthy and my family. And obviously being healthy is important because I want to be around for the family. So for me, I try to be very intentional about taking steps every day to do those things. So, I mean, written goals is a big deal. I mean, there's all sorts of studies out there that talk about if you just commit something to writing that you're so much more likely to accomplish it. So I write things down on paper. I have a pretty cool goal system set up in Evernote. In addition to that, I've also written out all of my goals and I've set them to my lock screen on my phone. So like 100 times a day, I'll actually see like some of my top goals all the time. So they're always right there. One of which, number three, be the most amazing husband ever. Nice. I do advise being a little bit more specific on your goals. The lock screen, this is a recent thing, and I just really quickly put that together. That's cool. But yeah, I definitely try to keep those in front of me all the time. As far as like the health stuff goes, I hired a coach, David Whitley, at the beginning of this year, and he is a performing strongman and a motivational speaker. But he also takes a limited number of people on as clients and does like this whole physique transformation thing. And working with somebody like him was phenomenal. In 12 weeks, I lost 20 pounds of fat, put on 10 pounds of muscle, felt better than I have in years. And I'm continuing with that. So I've got my fitness goals on my lock screen. I see those all the time and everything. So and I'm also trying to be more present and intentional. I did about 3 weeks ago, I started a 30-day meditation challenge, for example, because I keep hearing all of the amazing benefits that that has to all these successful people. And I mean, you know, I've read that for years, but every time I hear that, I think, meditation? You mean like just sitting there? Like, really? What's so great about that? Like, I do practically that like several hours every night. It's called sleeping. but yeah, sure enough, I'm 3 weeks into it and I really like it so far. And I think that's just going to continue helping me be mindful and keep that stuff at the forefront. And I really like it. It's been great. And yeah. So
cool. So one thing I admire is that you, with whatever it is, your business or these personal goals that you have, you're intentional.
Definitely.
You put things on your lock screen so you remember it's in your face every day. I think that you know, if nothing else, there's a huge lesson to be learned there, that you really only get the things that you want if you do the things that you need to do to get those things.
It's true. And I mean, as much of a lesson as that is to learn, it's one that I'm still learning all the time. I mean, I do all these things, but it's, you know, sometimes a few weeks go by or something where I'm just like, geez, I feel like I was really killing it a month ago. What happened? And all that. So like, I am trying to take steps like the lock screen and all of that, so it's always in front of me. So I don't accidentally go weeks or months at a time anymore, hopefully, where I then suddenly figure out, oh geez, I've really been missing the mark here and all of that. So I've done a renewed push for that right after Christmas of last year, and I feel like this year has been phenomenal because of it, and I'm really thankful for that and really happy about it. So
cool. Yeah, awesome. Well, how can people find out about you and all the crazy things that you do?
Our photography stuff, mcclellanstyle.com. I've also started a blog just about general improving what you're doing, so on and so forth, at seanmcclellan.com. And clearly, you need to text Mo Money to 33444.
That's 33444.
That is, yes, exactly.
I was terrified.
Excellent. I'm glad to know about that.
Yeah. Well, Sean, thank you so much for having us here in Nashville, and it's really been a pleasure talking to you.
I appreciate it. Thanks for coming out.
Awesome. Thank you. A huge thank you to Sean for inviting us to Nashville and for talking with us. Shootproof truly believes in community, and that's why we do these podcasts. That's what we're about, is creating community and creating environments for photographers. We want to know what you think about the podcast. Feel free to leave a comment or send us an email. Drop by for coffee if you're in Atlanta. And if you want to find out more about Shootproof, you can do that at www.shootproof.com. We love photographers, and we love helping you focus on what matters most. Thanks, and we'll see you all next time. Music for the Shootproof podcast is provided by Triple Scoop Music.